I call this meeting of Economic Development Committee to order. I note on the record that quorum is present. Rep. Katisu Tune, would you like to move the minutes?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Minutes have been moved from March 6th of 2024. Any discussion on the minutes? None? All those in favor of adopting the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay. Minutes have been adopted. First bill on the agenda today is House File 3736 with Chair Leslie Gard. I'll move that House File 3768 is laid over for possible inclusions. Welcome to the committee, Rep. Leslie Gard. I believe you have an author's amendment.
I do.
All right. Well, we move the author's amendment in front of the committee. Would you please explain your amendment?
The proposed amendment would increase the point source implementation grant cap to $12
million. All right. Any discussion on the A1 amendment on House File 3768? None. All those in favor of adopting this amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, say nay. Amendment has been adopted. Rep. Leslie Gard, please explain your bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members, for the opportunity to present the House file as amended. The amendment you have adopted would increase the point source implementation grant cap to $12 million. Both changes are supported by the Public Facilities Authority and will help communities across the state. The cap of these grants has not changed since 2017, since the prices for these projects have skyrocketed, as we all know. Our cities ensure that Minnesotans have clean drinking water and that the wastewater and sewage does not pollute the lakes, rivers, and streams. This change would help our communities do that with the financial assistance of the Public Facility Authority. Madam Chair, with me today, I have the Mayor of Aurora, Doug Greger, Jeff Freeman, to answer any questions. He's with the Public Facilities Authority. I also have John Pollard from LIUNA to discuss the importance of these jobs.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed for the record.
Thank you, Chair Hassan and committee members. My name is Doug Greger. I'm the mayor of Aurora, but I also serve as the chair of a fully independent East Range Water Board. So I'm appearing here in both capacities. I'm here today in support of House File 3768. And thank you, Representative Lizegard, for introducing the bill. Aurora is a very small town located on the east end of Minnesota's Iron Range, and it's surrounded by the town of White. And together, our two communities participate in a water system that serves about 950 customers. The city and town have spearheaded the first phase of a joint East Range water project that is designed ultimately to serve a total of four East Range communities and approximately 3,500 customers. After more than 10 years of planning and fundraising, bids for this now $33 million project were finally awarded on February 2nd. In order to complete the funding package for that project, Aurora and the town had to commit to take on a $12 million drinking water revolving fund loan and, most significantly, to implement an associated water service rate ramp-up schedule that could, over the 2.5-year course of the construction, raise our water service customer rates to $75 per month, a rate that's vastly in excess of what the PFA's calculated affordability rate is for our community. That affordability rate is approximately $31.50 due to the city's very low LMI status, with a median household income level of only $32,287, one of the very lowest in the state. So the project will receive a $5 million WIF grant under the Water Infrastructure Fund program to help finance a portion of our project costs. And officials at the PFA have indicated that our project could be eligible for a significant larger grant, one in excess of $5 million, if this statute or the proposed amendment in front of you is in fact adopted. I'm sure you're acutely aware of the fact that infrastructure project costs have increased dramatically in recent years. The engineer's cost estimates for our project increased from $17.2 million in 2017 to the current $33 million level, an increase of nearly 92% in the cost of that project. The statutory cap provisions of this section in question very obviously have not kept pace with the rising costs of those projects which the WIF grant funds are targeted to help. On behalf of the project's water service customers and similarly situated customers of poorer communities across the state, I urge you to approve this proposed amendment to the statute to raise the WIF cap to the amount of $10 million, and thank you for your consideration. I will ask any questions that any of the committee members might have.
Thank you for your testimony. Discussion on the bill. I see none. Last word on the bill.
This is a great bill. It helps communities, and I would ask for your support.
All right. I will renew my motion that House File 3768, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you. And I believe you're staying up there, Representative Scott. You have the next bill. Next bill on the agenda is House File 4532 from Rep. Leslie Gard. I'll move that House File 4532 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Rep. Leslie Gard, please explain your bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members, for hearing House File 4532, a bill appropriating $1 million grant to the Entrepreneur Fund for loan capital to be used to lend to small businesses. The Entrepreneur Fund was born out of the need to diversify industry on the Iron Range in the late 1980s when we were devastated. Its two main priorities were to support entrepreneurs to grow, to start and grow small businesses, and to renew the entrepreneurial culture on the Iron Range. The fund has grown geographically over the years and now services 16 counties, five tribal nations in Minnesota, serving mostly rural communities. The fund is critical as rural businesses are typically severely underbanked, and there is no lack of business services, and there is a lack of business services, providing essential capital and services for small business to sustain and grow in critical to a rural and a strong, healthy community. With me today, I have Duluth is Sean. He's the president and CEO of the Entrepreneur Fund. Also joining us, we have two owners, one from Little Falls and Jessica Lance from Boomtown on the Iron Range.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Sean Wellnitz. I'm the CEO of the Entrepreneur Fund. We cover, as Representative Liz Lagarde mentioned, 16 counties that cover central Minnesota and northeast Minnesota. And we're really here for a capital request for small business owners. And this bill effectively does two things for us. One is it's a big multiplier for us. These dollars that we do, $1 million would actually be a matching fund for us to go for federal dollars to match the $1 million that we actually are able to multiply to $12 million total that we can get out for small business owners across our region. And with that opens up opportunities for these business owners to access a variety of different programs, some that come from the state, some that come from federal, or some that come from our funds to get to these small business owners. And the reason we're here is because of demand. The demand for our services and lending have skyrocketed. Many of you are familiar of a need for access to capital during the pandemic, which was front and center. And that's kind of the role the Entrepreneur Fund plays. A key part for us is making sure that any entrepreneur has available access to capital, and we always provide services to go with that. So it hits a couple kind of for key reasons why people need to come to Entrepreneur Fund, and I want to share that just because I think it's important here. Often people will come to us for sectors that aren't bank-friendly, restaurants, retail, daycares, technology are tough to finance. They come to us early stages, especially startup. Folks who might not be a perfect borrower in terms of they might have less net worth, they might have a slightly lower credit score, or they might be coming to a new industry that they're not part of. A big need that we also fill is access to capital in rural, where bank consolidation has really minimized available capital for rural businesses. And of course, we play a role in macro trends that happen. Everyone knows the pandemic, more recently bank consolidation, and then tightened credit market has made our demand just go through the roof. And a little bit for scope, by the numbers, over the last 3 years, we deployed $73 million in loans. We average about $24.5 million per year, and that's at an average of about $60,000 per loan. So these loans help 300 to 600 small businesses all throughout the area. Well, that's a little bit on numbers. I know many of you know these people and know that are in here in your districts. I know Representative Igo is in our district. He knows Cobb Cook Grocery in Hibbing, who we helped employees buy ownership. Lakewood Lodge in Deer River, that's a veteran-owned resort, who we helped get access to capital. Representative Kozlowski knows Annie's Daycare, one that we tried to get daycare up and going, as well as a BIPOC business owner in Zen House, who we helped them buy their building to build wealth in their community. Representative Perryman, Momentum Center treatment facility, and we're, I can go on with names, but probably the best way to articulate this.
You can keep going if you want.
We know Rudy's and Aurora is another restaurant we have. But I share that because these are real residents and real communities, that these make a profound impact beyond the numbers. And I know all of you here know that you're in that work, but I think we're not just here as one appropriation, that this is need. This goes right to the people in the communities that we're helping. And there's no better place to tell that actually than through a business owner themselves. And so with that, actually, I wanted to invite up here as the next speaker, Adele Sterin, who is the owner of Babies on Broadway, where the Entrepreneur Fund has now made 8 loans since her startup journey. Started as a retail store in Little Falls, has since really built an empire, which I not only am I proud of, but apparently the state of, or the SBA is too, when they named her the 2023 Women Business Owner of the Year for the state of Minnesota. And so with that, to share her story, I was, with your permission here, I'd like to invite her up to share her testimony.
All right, thank you for your testimony. The next testifier, please come to the testifying table and introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Adele Sterin. I am owner of Babies on Broadway. Thank you, Sean, for the introduction, and thank you for hearing my story today. As a busy mom and business owner, I felt it was really important to clear my schedule to come down today to just convey the importance of the Entrepreneur Fund and the funds that they are seeking. I am in my 11th year of business this year. I started a dream that I want to say very many people did not believe in. I was asked many times by traditional banks why I would quit my good career to start doing what I was doing. And within a couple years of starting my business, I found myself a single mom that was in the midst of an ugly divorce and had poor credit and had to support my 2 children with this business and dream that I was banking on. Sean mentioned I've taken 8 loans from the Entrepreneur Fund. And if it wasn't for that and that access to capital and resources, Babies on Broadway would not be around. We have expanded into 2 different locations. So we are in the town of Little Falls, which is a rural community, and we recently expanded into the downtown of St. Cloud. Both our locations are in downtowns that needed revitalization. We have grown ourselves to a multi-million dollar business. We employ 20 amazing staff members. We plan to continue that growth and to serve our communities. That money funds back into our communities by bringing commerce and traffic from not only all over the state, but from all over the nation. When they're in our communities shopping and visiting us, we send them to other businesses, and we give back to our communities frequently. I can honestly say that at the point where I was at in my business, where I went to the Entrepreneur Fund, the amount of times I heard no or you're unbankable was unbelievable. I have every checkbox against me. I'm rural, I'm retail, I'm a woman. It just wasn't going well. Entrepreneur Fund listens with open ears, no judgment. And they really look at what you're doing as a business. The funds are vital. The Women's Business Alliance that they are part of is a vital resource. And there is very little in rural Minnesota. So the funds that they give to people to access will continue to grow and help businesses flourish. So that is why I wanted to come share my story today.
Thank you for sharing your story. I'm just curious, what is Babies on Broadway?
Yeah.
It's a store?
Yeah, so Babies on Broadway is we started as a retail brick and mortar baby store. So essentially, think a smaller version of a bye-bye baby. But our goal was to truly educate parents and empower them to really understand the products that they were purchasing and create a support network for mothers. With that, I have grown to be a certified passenger safety technician. I'm a certified lactation counselor. We have continuous mom groups and supports for all parents and caregivers.
Well, thank you for doing all of that.
Yeah, you are welcome. Thank you.
Yep. We have an amendment, the A2 amendment. Oh, is there one more testifier? I'm hearing there's one more testifier. Nope. Okay. All right. We're moving on to the A2 amendment. Lead Kosnick, I believe.
No.
Withdrawing? Okay. The amendment has been withdrawn. Discussion on the bill. Rep. Igoe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to speak to the Entrepreneur Fund and the great work they do. Obviously, they do a lot of work in my district, but I just want to say a little bit more to their testimony and kind of talk about the good they do. Being a state representative for Northern Minnesota, you're in a lot of meetings talking about economic development. And you travel all over and you meet with small businesses and you meet with groups, other economic development agencies. But Entrepreneur Fund is always there, being a part of those conversations, trying to find ways they can partner with our communities to do a lot of good. So seeing this bill in front of committee today and talking about that and hearing some of their stories and the work they are doing, it really is something that I hope this whole committee room is being really excited about, and it kind of warms your heart. So I'm really glad to see that we can bring a bill today that's going to invest in them so they can continue to do the good work that they do across North and Central Minnesota, because they are a success plan. And I just want to thank them enough. Can't thank them enough for what they do, and I just hope we all can support this bill today and get it across the finish line.
Thank you. Rep. Katisotun.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Lisligard, thanks for bringing this bill. It's been an honor to serve with you for the last 6 years and to have the chance to visit you on the range and meet some of your constituents, and particularly in the space of childcare, because I know how passionate you are about developing and continuing to grow the economy up on the range, and we can't do that if we don't have places for people to send their kids when they want to start a business, grow a business, go back to work, anything like that. So I think, it's clear just how much of an impact this has had when the first testifier was sharing all the districts just on this committee that this program has already touched. And I just really appreciate you delivering for your community and the surrounding communities.
Thank you. Vice Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Lisligard. I just want to echo what my fellow committee members have said here, that I think this is a really great use of money and a really great use of taxpayer money. As most of you know, I've worked a lot in the cannabis space, and so my question is for Sean, and you can answer now or answer later, but we have a lot of entrepreneurs, potential entrepreneurs or want to be entrepreneurs on the range and in northeastern Minnesota asking about investments in startups in the cannabis and hemp space. We know cannabis businesses do not exist yet, but hemp businesses do. And so my question is your organization prepared and or willing to work with these sorts of startups? And if not, I'd love to follow up with you afterwards to learn a little bit more about what's in your way or what those barriers might be. Thank you.
Go ahead.
I can say we are an exploration of that, and for two reasons. One, I think on the range it has been an emerging need and interest. Second, it's been very important to the Native nations we serve that are part of their economy. And so, like many, we have some federal funds, but we have non-federal funds. Those are kind of the current, I wouldn't say barriers, just things we have to work with. So it's in process. We're in conversation with IRRRB and the Mille Lacs tribal community as well, too, about how to support that.
Thank you, Chair, and Rep. Lisligard for bringing this bill forward, but also the bill that we just heard beforehand on the water infrastructure grants. And super excited that we're uplifting Entrepreneur Fund, and I think everybody here has echoed already a lot of the sentiments that I would share in just the good work that you do across our region. And I think this just showcases how interconnected our regions are, whether it's your district or mine or up over across to the western side. And actually, Rep. Hansen took the question, so that's great on the cannabis. So I'd love to continue to have those conversations as well. As I know you're doing a ton of good work, and I have so many community members who are BIPOC entrepreneurs, women-owned, veteran-owned, and love to continue to see how that's going to build and carry out. But I really want to just ground us in why these two bills are so important to go hand in hand. that we have a lot of communities that want to grow and expand and meet our workforce needs, to grow our tax base, to make sure that we have housing, but we really need that infrastructure to be able to do all of this. And so I really support fully both of these bills. So thank you.
Thank you. Last word on the bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for the kind words. This is a wonderful, wonderful program that improves people's lives and creates opportunity. But what it does is only, you know, like the Rangers, we like to leverage. This is a $1 million investment for 12, right? That's a pretty good ratio, $1 million for 12, and it improves people's lives and it helps diversify and grow business that we need desperately in Northeast Minnesota. So I would hope you would support it and it moves forward.
Thank you, Chair Lislegard, and thank you for bringing your community's voices to us. I know that it's many hours away, but having this community voices here is really vital, and it's why we do this work. I renew my motion that House File 4532 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you.
Okay, the next bill on the agenda is House File 3846. So while our wonderful chair makes her way to the front here. Rep. Hassan moves that House File 3846 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Chair Hassan, please go ahead and explain your bill.
All right. Good morning, committee members. You guys remember that we did a lot of work last year and in a very short amount of time. And what this bill does is just clean up some of the work that we did and make some small change. It should be pretty straightforward and easy bill. With that, I'll have my testifier just speak on the importance of this bill, but pretty much it's just a cleanup bill.
Thank you, Chair Hassan. And testifier, you can go ahead and introduce yourself for the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Electra Stradletsky, and I'm the Director of Shared Ownership for the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers, or MCCD. Last year, the legislature enacted the Community Wealth Building Program and designated MCCD as the pilot's administrator. As a reminder, the program helps target resources to help entrepreneurs and community businesses that are owned by immigrants, women, Black, Indigenous, people of color, veterans, people with disabilities, and other low-wealth individuals start or convert existing businesses to shared ownership models. Since the enactment of the program, I was hired to expand shared ownership work in Minnesota. We've been holding monthly information sessions and will be ramping up outreach statewide next month. Additionally, we've been meeting with organizations and municipalities to help spread the word. I've presented to the Minnesota Association of Workforce Boards and met with the Director of Business Retention, who leads succession planning and retention at the University of Minnesota's Extension. Currently, we have three businesses that we are working with to provide technical assistance and prepare loan applications. So this bill would make small policy adjustments and allocate a small direct appropriation to MCCD. First, the bill would add a 15% forgivable loan addition. As we work to ensure that Minnesotans know about shared ownership, we see forgivable loans and low interest rates as important and powerful incentives. Second, this bill would allow the loans to be more inclusive by including a fee-based lending component. Third, we are requesting a small one-time appropriation. Historically, shared ownership models have not been easy to navigate, but this is where we, along with our partners in the field, come in. Our goal is to help eliminate barriers to starting or converting shared ownership businesses, and this supplemental funding will help MCCD with the amount of outreach, education, training, and technical assistance that's needed so that this program can be a success beyond the pilot phase. So thank you, Rep. Hassan, for carrying this bill, and to thank you for the members of your committee for support and expanding resources for shared ownership. I'm happy to answer any questions, but I thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for that. It looks like we have an A1 amendment from Representative Igo. Representative Igo, do you want to move your amendment and explain it, please?
Yes, so move, Madam Chair. So The A1 amendment is a pretty simple amendment. It would just be striking lines 2.5 through 2.7 of the bill, which is about the 15% of loans principal amount being forgiven. The reason I wanted to move this amendment is just to kind of spur a conversation that if we're going to be putting money into a group that's doing a lot of good work, my worry was if we're doing forgiveness, does that take away the ability for you as organizations to have more capital to do more loans? I don't want to see you losing the ability. So I guess that's the amendment that I kind of wanted to open up that discussion around it.
Thank you, Representative Igo. Any discussion to the amendment? Representative Katiza Watun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know, perhaps either our testifier or Representative Hassan can speak to this, but I know that in particularly in the childcare industry, and we've worked with some of the organizations who do business training, business support, these sorts of things, the percentage of forgiven loans is actually often much smaller than what is allowed in statute, but it just allows these organizations to work with borrowers who are still getting, it takes more time for them to get off the ground. So I don't know if you have a specific case that you want to share with us, but that's just from my work in children and families, kind of from that perspective. I know that that's not, we don't always reach that 15% or what is available in statute to be forgiven, but that it just gives a little bit more flexibility for the borrowers.
Yeah, thank you for the question. One of the reasons why the level is set where it is because oftentimes shared ownership businesses also struggle with bankability and access to capital. So they're managing oftentimes very, very tight margins. And we see forgivability as helping provide some relief for how they are able to manage their cash flow. Also, a lot of times people are intimidated by carrying debt. And this allows and encourages them to make some of those strategic investments in innovation and, putting those monies back into their businesses. We've had some really good success by offering loan forgiveness to some of our borrowers throughout the time period where we've done it with other programs and other products. And consistently, we hear from the borrowers that we serve that forgiveness gives them the space to breathe and to focus on other strategic elements of their business. And, has been a critical lifeline for the work that they do.
Representative Igo, a follow-up?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'll just ask a follow-up question to that. So do your organization see any loss in the ability to provide more loans by when you give loan forgiveness because you're not getting that return in those dollars?
We haven't.
Okay.
No, we have not. We've spoken to the Department of Economic Development and Employment about this quite a bit and addressed some of the concerns that they had about the ability of the funds to recirculate, and we don't maintain any concerns about that.
Any further follow-up?
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. That's the reason I moved this amendment, because I want to have that conversation, because I know that loan forgiveness can be a tool that is used very well. I just didn't want to see your organization lose out on dollars that you could be helping more people with if we put this in the bill today. So with my questions being answered, I'll withdraw the amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. With the amendment being withdrawn, any further discussion to the bill? Carly, Representative Katiza Watun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so I was just reviewing some of the language again, and specifically in line 1.17, it talks about the fee or interest rate that shall not be higher than the Wall Street Journal prime rate. I know that these are low interest loans to up and coming entrepreneurs, and I just wanted to clarify, and I know Chair Hassan, this is something that's really important to you, but for members who are unable to take on debt for various reasons, including religious reasons, do you also offer, and the CDFIs, are they required to offer no interest loans in addition to the low interest loans?
Electra.
I actually don't know the answer to that question. I'm happy to defer to.
It looks like we have a phone a friend coming in. Feel free to join us at the testifier table. Introduce yourself and feel free to answer the question.
Hello, Chair Hansen and committee members. My name is Carrie Johnson. I'm the Director of State Policy and Field Building at MCCD. To answer your question, we undertook a review, and there will be another bill that we'll be hearing next week with a number of other policy changes, including the policy changes seen in this bill, in which we had a working group and convened organizations across the entire state, different sizes, serving different culturally specific groups, and we had a conversation that none of the state's small business programs right now allow fee-based lending, and so we're hoping to make that change so that that can be an option for all of the small business loan programs at Deed. And so this bill does incorporate that, and then I'm also working with Chair Hassan to offer an amendment for the entire policy bill next week to get rid of the language of Wall Street Prime, knowing that that is a concern of the chairs.
Thank you for that. Any follow-up, Representative Cattizzo-Toon?
I appreciate that update. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion to the bill? Seeing none, Rep. Hassan, any final comments?
It's a good bill.
Well, thank you, Chair Hassan. Chair Hassan renews her motion that House File 3846 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you. While Chair Hassan makes her way back to the table, we have our next testifier up. We have two more bills from Representative Sensenmura, so get yourself comfortable, and Chair Hassan will take over. Thank you.
All right, Representative Sensenmura, welcome to the committee. The next bill on the agenda is House File 4545. I'll move that House File 4545 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
4545, okay.
It's the right number? Okay. Yeah. Or not? Okay.
Okay.
Well, we're going with the first. The first one is 4545. I know you have two bills. Please explain your bill.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chair Hassan. Good morning to members of the Economic Development Committee. Happy to be here. I was supposed to be with you all last week, but I was sick, so happy to be here today. I'm here today to talk about an important bill to strengthen the capacity of nonprofits who do amazing work in the state of Minnesota. We have a bill today to ask for an appropriation of $497,000, as outlined in the bill, for capital and technical assistance to support nonprofits with active facilities projects. So this bill is about strengthening and protecting the investments that the state made last year, the historic investments that we made in our 2023 budget. The bill will help ensure that significant community projects are brought across the finish line. And this is about nonprofits being able to upgrade and expand their abilities to more and greater work. And ultimately, it's about better services and supports for the in-need community members that nonprofits serve. So through this bill, Propel for Nonprofits, which has a rich history of supporting nonprofits throughout our state, will provide loan capital to help make sure that these capital and facilities projects financially get to the finish line so that the work can be completed. And Propel will also provide nonprofits with financial guidance and expertise to support the organizations in financially and operationally successful projects. And I have my testifier, Henry Jimenez, with me today, and so I will pass it over to them.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee and Representative Sensenmura. My name is Henry Jimenez. I'm the new president and CEO of Propel Nonprofits and here to support House File 4545. Minnesota nonprofits receive appropriations from the state in 2023 to support transformational projects. Capital investments total nearly $225 million to 68 nonprofit organizations. Today I come to you to represent Propel as a community partner to ensure that these projects are supported across to the finish line and to ensure that the state investments are protected and strengthened. Often projects are faced with funding gaps and run into challenges as they reach completion. Construction, logistics, unforeseen operation expenses, and other types of gaps, especially when it comes to these large scale projects, which is why Propel finance expertise and nonprofit savviness comes into play. As partner to these projects, Propel would provide loan capital and support through the projects, ensuring complete impactful community development projects with expert technical assistance tailored to their needs. There was an $85 million gap that was requested and funded Of course, you can fully fund, you can't fully fund all of these projects. So this is about a $1.25 million shortfall for each of these 68 organizations. Propel with this appropriation would provide targeted support to help manage and fill these gaps. I want to reiterate that having a patient, flexible project partner with capital and technical expertise is critical to the success of these projects. Your support of this bill will leverage and ensure your investments and have great impact on the many communities these nonprofits serve. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe we have another testifier. Please come to the testifying table, introduce yourself, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hassan, Representative Sensor Mura, and members of the committee. My name is Ellie O'Brien, and I'm the Vice President and CFO at Propel Nonprofits. In addition to what Henry shared, I want to share more about Propel's capital access program. In addition to providing critical access to capital to expand programs and services, bridge cash flow gaps, and purchase or renovate buildings, Propel provides wraparound capacity building supports to nonprofits. With expertise in finance, nonprofit finance, strategy, and governance, Propel is a trusted partner to provide guidance and support for nonprofits as they navigate their financial and operational challenges and opportunities. You can see more about our capital access program in your handouts. Additionally, Propel, as ever, remains committed to accountability for responsibly stewarding state dollars and to nonprofit organizations using sound fiscal management practices. Thank you for your time. We appreciate the opportunity to be here with you.
Thank you. Discussion on the bill.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Rep. First of all, St. Cloud has been mentioned twice today. I represent St. Cloud, and it's been mentioned many times in this committee. So I am very thankful for the economic development that we're all voting on and keeping it together and keeping our rural St. Cloud strong. I'm very proud of my fishing hole of 14A, and I watch my own bobber. So that is, I just have a quick question, and that is, how will the investment that you're asking for today help Propel leverage additional funds to support projects and nonprofits? I think this has some good investment and partnership that you'll be able to leverage these funds. Am I correct?
Yeah, I'll turn it over to my testifier to answer.
Madam Chair, Representative Perryman, great question. Every single project that the state has invested in should not just be asking for the full amount coming from the state. It should come from many sources, including this funding that we're requesting here. We have already been allocated about $5 million from federal funds to be able to support these projects. But as you can imagine, deploying money costs money, folks, you know, and so this funding that we're asking is for us to be able to provide the right technical assistance to be able to leverage that $5 million to these projects. And I could tell you that we're not stopping there. We're in conversation with philanthropy and other sources of funding to be able to hopefully provide more than $5 million towards these projects.
You have a follow-up?
No, thank you, Chair, and thank you. Look forward to seeing you in St. Cloud.
Other discussion on the bill?
Madam Chair.
Oh, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One thing that caught my eye, and I guess I would like clarification, normally in these committees and everything, we see nice round numbers, and $497 million. So my question is, are these earmarked? And you said something specifically about target gaps. Mm-hmm. So would this specifically hit those target gaps? And then there, I have a follow-up question. And I'm sorry, which target gaps?
President Jimenez.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I wanted to get your attention with a weird number, 497. So it worked. But the reality is I want to actually bring attention to the gap in the investment that our state has done with the 68 organizations. That's really where I want the attention to go. To your point, very good question. You have gaps that are much higher than $1 million. You have 10, $20 million projects that are still, you know, $8 to $10 million gap. There, you have other, you know, smaller projects that are much smaller gaps. But the point that we're trying to make here is that money is actually we're going to spend the money to provide the technical assistance that these nonprofits will need. A lot of these nonprofits, they've never done any capital investment, any type of project like this ever. And quite frankly, they probably never will again. It's a one-time or once-in-a-generation. It doesn't make sense for them to build that skill set when we have it or we have other partners that can provide that and get them to the finish line instead of 68 projects just turning their wheels, trying to figure it out, and it's just going to cost them more money to build in a year or two. Let's just get it done. I'm sure you all would love to go some ribbon cutting ceremonies here in the next couple months. I want to see that. I want to be able to support all of your districts with this.
Representative Wiener, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. That you actually brought one of the next follow-up question, which would be nonprofits. And did the nonprofits you work with get funding last year?
Yeah.
President Jimenez.
Madam Chair, Representative, we work with hundreds of nonprofits. A lot of the folks that receive funding might be in our pipeline now. It doesn't mean that they can afford to pay for our services or for us that we could afford to give all 68 nonprofits the services required to be able to, you know, figure out all of their financing that is needed to finish these projects. From a pre-acquisition cost, we're working towards getting some grant money to support them with maybe some pre-acquisition costs. Some of the things that they may not have thought about before coming to the state when they ask for an amount.
You have a follow-up?
Well, I would just like to say that the 497 met its goal. You caught attention. So it worked. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Vice Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to say hi. Welcome to my fellow Mappler here in committee, and thank you to Propel for all the work you do for the fabulous nonprofits across the state of Minnesota. Nonprofits always have a hard time drawing down money or stabilizing that capital to continue to do the critical work that really holds our community and our state together. So it is great to see you here and to know that these public-private partnerships that we have to serve the most vulnerable Minnesotans across the state, this is a worthy investment, and so I'm really grateful for you, and I just wanted to say thank you.
Yes, President Jimenez.
Madam Chair, thank you, and Representative Hansen, good to see you again as well. I want to make it clear that this is not everything that Propel will need to help 68 organizations, and trust me, there's more than 68 organizations, but I want to prove to you what we could do with this money so you could see that we can actually support nonprofits get their projects to the finish line. So I want to make clear that we don't walk away here thinking, oh, Henry's going to help 68 organizations. It would be a lot more than 497,000. But I want to make sure that this investment is shown here, hopefully next year, with you, with some actual outcomes of what this actually did, how we leverage the money, how we help folks get to the finish line. So I'm looking forward to coming back and tell you, look, how successful we were. Or being transparent and tell you, look, it actually cost us a lot more than we thought. But for us to have that real conversation with you so that we can better support the nonprofit sector, not just in the Twin Cities, but in Long Prairie and Greater Minnesota as well. So,
all right.
Thank you.
Closing remarks.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Hassan and members of the committee. Before I came to the legislature, I was an executive director of a nonprofit who actually got to go through some financial training with Propel, which I can tell you was incredibly helpful for me in developing my technical capacity. And I think so many people come to nonprofit work because they have a passion for the mission. It doesn't necessarily mean that they have, you know, the financial acumen or, you know, the ability to kind of understand how state funding works. And so I think the state needs partners to support our nonprofits in doing that work. And so grateful to Propel for the work they do, and I hope that we can further invest in them so we can invest in nonprofits throughout our state.
Thank you. Congratulations, Mr. Jimenez, on your new role as the president and CEO of Propel Nonprofits. With that, I'll renew my motion that House File 4545 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you. Our next bill is House File 2881. I'll move House File 2881 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. We have an A1 amendment.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members. So the A1 amendment gets the bill in the shape that I would like. It gives a financial amount to the bill, which it did not have before. It also indicates that for the advisory group for the Headwaters program, that there would be a stipend available to support with some of the costs of the advisory members. So I ask that you all support this motion just to get the bill in the shape that I would like.
All right. The A1 amendment is before us. Discussion on the amendment. None. All those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say nay. Amendment is adopted. Rep. Sensenmura, please explain your bill.
Thank you. So I am here today to talk about House File 2881 as amended, which would establish the Headwaters Community Food and Water Economic Resiliency Program. So this bill has been worked on by really food justice advocates and people that are working in the environmental justice space for a number of years. And this is, I think, looking to do something really big in Minnesota, which is really trying to build out our sustainable food systems and really try to build up the economic resiliency and sustainability and independence that we can have here in Minnesota. So I was able to actually travel to Japan this year and to learn a little bit about the food system in Japan. And one of the things that was really surprising to me and troubling to me was that in Japan, they only grow about a third of their food, and so they import two-thirds of their food. And so when they think about future threats to their economy, to the people of Japan, they think about the fact that they really are not able to be resilient in that way. You know, I think in Minnesota, we know that we are really blessed to be in a state that is very bountiful, that where we are able to grow a lot of our own food and really grow food for the rest of the nation. But we know, especially from things that have happened in recent years in terms of natural disasters, in terms of the COVID-19 pandemic and so many disruptions to our food supply chain, that we are also, you know, face some of the same threats as other countries about really having resiliency and independence. And so I believe that we need to be investing as much as possible in our farmers, but really building up our food systems that can, you know, make sure that the food that we grow is kept here, and that farmers in Minnesota and people that work in the food industry are really able to benefit, and we are able to be resilient and strong by ourselves. So this bill is pretty ambitious, I would say. It's a $30 million a year program. And so we talked, you know, myself and the advocates that are working on this bill, we talked a lot about knowing that that was going to be a really big number to bring before the committee. But I can tell you that to really build up our food systems, this number does not even begin to kind of cover what we need. And I sit on the agriculture committee, and so we are, you know, thinking of all the time about how do we really, you know, support those small farmers, the people that are trying to get their farm off the ground, or the person that's trying to create their own local salsa business to sell at the market. And I know that from being on that committee, you know, we know that entrepreneurs and farmers really struggle with that here in the metro, but they really struggle with that statewide, to be able to understand how do they access new markets, how do they make sure that the goods that they make are able to get to a supermarket if you only have, you know, one supermarket and it's 50 miles away from your house. You know, this summer I went on a farm tour in southern Minnesota, and I got to meet some farmers that were starting to use cover crops. And so they were using cover crops of daikon and kale. So they're growing all this daikon and kale. It's helping them with their soil. And then when I asked them, you know, what do you do with it, they said that they just compost it because they don't eat daikon and kale, and they didn't know where to find a market for it. And when we know that we're in a state that has food insecurity, right, the fact that we shouldn't be throwing away food, we shouldn't be composting food even if it's going back into the soil, but that's also, you know, farmers who are missing the ability to bring that food to market and to make some money off of that. So this bill is looking to establish what we're calling regenerative food web economies, which is really ways to create hubs between farmers, markets, restaurant industries, really everyone who's involved in the sustainable food business. And so to help kind of illustrate more about what that could look like and to illustrate, I think, folks that are doing that on a smaller scale that would love to be able to do that on a larger scale, I do have some testifiers with me today that I would love to bring up.
All right. The first testifier is Lisa Schutz. If I kill your name, last name, you're going to have to correct me on the record. Indigenous food producer, founder and director of Southeast Minnesota Food Rescue and Redistribution. Please come to the testifying table and introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Committee. My name is Lisa Schutz. I'm an indigenous food producer in southern Minnesota, and I'm the director of a program called Southeast Minnesota Food Rescue and Redistribution. I would like to thank you, Representative Senator Mira, for the work that you are doing. We are a nonprofit 501c3 program, and I am on the leadership team of the bill that is here before you for the emerging local food economy. We were established in 2019, and we are leaders in the development of sustainable food systems. These systems are designed to prevent food waste, increase local and regional food economy, and normalize food security in marginalized communities. I would like to share with you food access conditions in southern Minnesota right now. Although southern Minnesota is the home to renowned, globally recognized food companies, the region has poverty and food insecurity rates that are more than double the U.S. rates. We are responding to these conditions in a number of different ways, but we are operating in the center of Minnesota's food economy, and we provide BIPOC and indigenous food producers whose market share is less than 7% of the ag economy here in Minnesota, by providing services that can strengthen their market share and also their economy. We have a network of over 100 farmers, and we have at least five times that amount that need our services that we're unable to serve at this time. Our services include coordination of supply chain, so that means procurement, rescue, distribution, processing, and delivery of the foods that we have. We offer wholesale aggregate business management and teach our farmers how to make value-add products. Our food waste prevention program is very simple. We work with farmers in the field. We work with farmers at farmers markets. I have been trading at Minnesota farmers markets for over a decade, so I can assure you that our waste is very, very high. 45% Minnesota reports of the waste in our landfills is organic and food. So we, in our short time of working, we have rescued over 72,000 pounds of food, and we have avoided 108 metric tons of greenhouse gas. We are normalizing food security and meeting food system service gaps that we know exist today. We know that there are many communities that do not have access to food that is grown right in their backyard. We aim to move that in a different direction. We work with underserved satellite food pantries, places like the Salvation Army. We are in partnership with learning institutions such as Riverland Community College to redesign how they procure their food and how they distribute that to their students. We work to blur the lines between food security and food insecurity. I am indigenous, our program is indigenous led, and our principles and our way of operating is very much aligned with indigenous principles for robust, resilient food systems. We understand and know and have done a proof of concept study that if we reduce our waste and we redirect that food and we increase the economy of the communities that we are working in, a robust and sustainable food system is a natural outcome. There's not a lot of other things that need to happen. What we struggle, we work with youth. We have an ambassador ecosystem ambassador program. We're working with Austin Public Schools with their American Indian education programming, we're cultivating our future farmers towards regenerative farming to understand their local food system and how to help shore up, protect, and provide for that local food system. I thank you for your time today and all of you for your attention.
Thank you very much. The next testifier is Jason Montgomery. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Hassan and members of the Economic Development Committee. My name is Jason Montgomery Reese. I'm the farm director for Dream of Wild Health. Dream of Wild Health is one of the longest serving Native American nonprofit organizations in the Twin Cities. We're working with dozens of partners across the Twin Cities metro and greater Minnesota to strengthen local food systems and increase access to healthy indigenous foods. We support Native American economic development across the food chain, supporting farmers, food entrepreneurs, chefs, restaurants, and small businesses. And one of the barriers of increasing economic opportunities is access to land, equipment, processing facilities for emerging Native American farmers. And this bill will support us in doing that work. The decentralized, coordinated, source-to-table food web economy outlined in this bill provides the vital economic infrastructure identified by local food initiatives to support our operations and a system to generate the state's capacity to normalize food and water security in all of our communities. Crucially, this bill recognizes the role of BIPOC leadership in the local food economy and the value of supporting that role. Additionally, the food web economy aligns with the Minnesota Department of Health's climate and health equity goals. We believe that our farm can serve as a replicable model for how to grow and adapt during climate change. The food web system outlined in this bill will employ thousands of our neighbors to grow, prepare, preserve, deliver, and store the foods that we all need to thrive. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you. The next testifier is Marita. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Marita Bougeau, and I am the founder of Just Food and Water. At the outset of the 20th century, the population of Duluth, Minnesota was 150,000. The area had changed rapidly, and local leaders realized that there was no organized food system to feed the population. So together, they devised a plan to establish a system that included 5 to 10 acre farms within the city limits and the adjacent lands. Land was also set aside for urban gardening, and residents were provided with seeds and plots free of charge to encourage food production for seasonal eating and preservation. Ultimately, this combination of family farms and urban gardens was so successful that they were able to feed Duluth's population and market the surplus across the region. I'm telling this story to highlight the success of an economy designed by city leaders and local residents to respond to their circumstances. They needed a dependable system capable of feeding the population, and they achieved their mission with a collection of 5 to 10 acre farms that yielded abundant sources of foods for seasonal use, preservation, and storage. With market certainty, farmers could plan effectively and meet demands. Farmers and residents alike benefited. Their success is notable for another reason. Due to local climate conditions, the growing season began on the 1st of June and might last through August. Nighttime temperatures could drop below freezing as early as mid-August. Even with this brief growing season, Duluth's food economy thrived because it was designed to adapt to local conditions. Today, the familiar patterns of the last century, these weather patterns, are gone. We know that to be successful, we need to plan for unpredictable weather conditions and design a locally adapted sustainable economy. The good news is that the work of creating that economy has begun. In recent years, local food initiatives emerged in response to the absence of a just, sustainable, and responsive food economy and the enduring impacts of food insecurity. While the focus and forms of these leaderships vary, they share a common purpose: normalizing access to healthy, affordable, culturally relevant food sources for everyone. From their experiences operating in the local food landscape, they have identified a set of needs which could be met with public policy defined to support their operations and public investment to back those policies. The Economic Resiliency Program outlined in House File 2881 responds to those needs. And by creating a decentralized, coordinated, locally adapted source-to-table food web, it will invest in physical and operational infrastructure for every part of that food web. This legislation fosters the growth of a vibrant and inclusive economy that, as Jason said, will employ our neighbors to grow, prepare and preserve, and deliver food in our communities. By design and practice, the food web is an energy management system for food and water. The purpose is to normalize daily access to sustainably sourced foods while also preventing waste. With established markets, storage sites, and kitchen staff to prepare and preserve throughout the year, every part of the system can respond effectively. That capacity to plan and deliver will help us meet demands where people live and work, and for valued programs such as the Farm to School and Farm to Early Care programs. As Minnesota makes investments to thrive in the face of unpredictable weather conditions, establishing a sustainable, just, and responsive food economy needs to top the list of priorities. I think we can agree that normalizing food and water security is a practical necessity and a moral imperative. Today we have an opportunity to create an economy designed to support our role as stewards of the home we share. This is a role that no one else can play, and it is only possible with an economy designed to support it. Embracing that role will have lasting impacts on the health and well-being of our communities and set us on a course for success. I urge you to support this bill, and I thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you. That concludes testimonies. Discussion on the bill. Rep. Igel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess to start kind of my questions, I just wondered, is anyone from Deed here today?
Yes, we have a Deed in the room.
Okay, so I just have a question for Deed, because with all the testimony here, this bill is a huge ask of one of our state agencies. Okay. So I just want to see, you know, and hear from the agency, you know, how they plan to implement this, if they've got the resources to do so, you know, what's their capacity.
All right, I see somebody, Nathan is coming down. Have you heard the question, or should we repeat it?
I heard it.
Okay, all right. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nathan Ratner. I'm with Government Relations at Deed. Thank you, Representative, for your question. We as well have concerns about our capacity to implement this program. We do not have expertise in administering agricultural programs, and so our recommendation would be that the Agriculture Committee should consider this bill as well as the Department of Ag administering it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, thank you. That I really kind of outlined one of the concerns I had, because, you know, we're facing a structural imbalance in our budget, and this bill right in front of us is $60 million. And right now we're hearing that one of our state agencies is already worried about not being able to implement, so we're going to spend money on it. One of my other questions I wanted to follow up on was on page 3, line 3.6 to 3.7. It says, provide affordable and accessible health care for every member of the food web economy. Can I just get a little... I just want to know exactly what that's going to mean for this program that we have in front of us today.
Thank you, Nathan. Rep. Sensenmura, who would you like to take that?
Yeah, and I don't know if any of the testifiers would like to come speak to that. You know, I think the reality is that the people that are feeding us healthy food are oftentimes not able to have healthy conditions themselves for themselves, and I think that includes access to health care. And so when we think about how we would build up our food economy, we want to make sure that the people that work in that economy have access to the health care that they need.
All right.
Rep. Igo. Thank you, Madam Chair. So the reason I asked that question is because, and again, I'm trying to interpret how this is going to be implemented based on, you know, the couple pages of language we have in front of us. But that right there, depending on the scope of where this proposed bill language goes, that could easily eat up all $60 million that you're appropriating, trying to do that by creating a type of health care. And I think the idea of your bill to get at and try and make this and secure food securities for people, that could be, I have a lot of concerns with language like that. The other thing I wanted to ask is about 3.10, the advisory committee. Do we have any size limitations, or is it as many people as the agency would see fit? Where do you start and stop on that?
Representative Sensenmura.
Yeah, I think that that's something that would need to be, you know, further developed with the agency. But I think, you know, normally when we have advisory committees, I do think that they have, you know, a limit to them, and then they also, you know, start to have a breakdown about who they want on the committee. So I think that would be further work for the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, because if you look at the list right here, I mean, if we start with, you know, organic farmers and you go all the way up to a public health official, I mean, that's, you're on both ends of the spectrum there, and it could just get really large. And I think all of us know if you have too many people working on, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen, right? Mm-hmm. So that was a concern I had. I also want to ask, we do not have a fiscal note for the bill yet, correct?
We do not.
For the record, Ken Savory, House Fiscal. I just want to point out to members that typically when there are direct appropriations, that is both the limit and the lower point of the bill. There wouldn't be allowed any appropriation that would exceed $30 million per year because the bill is so specific in what the appropriation is. There's no contingency language that allows for the commissioner to say to appropriate dollars or for the legislature or treasury to provide extra dollars as would the bill would require. So it's capped at $30
million. Mr. Igo.
Thank you for that. Because the reason I ask is when we're talking about a scope of this, again, I was curious how many FTEs would probably come with a program implementation of this, because, I mean, working in this for just a couple of years now, I mean, we're looking at quite a few, I would think, which is going to eat up a lot of that money. So I guess in summary, if I can just kind of close with my thoughts on the bill, I think this is very ambitious, and you said that, so I'll give you credit for that, but I just think putting $60 million at a time where we have a structural imbalance in our state budget for a program that isn't necessarily proven yet, we don't have all the kinks worked out on, is just a really bold statement to do, and I would just I encourage that we should maybe put the brakes on this a little and have more discussions to fix some of those issues and really figure out, you know, is there a way to do this without putting $60 million of taxpayer dollars in it? Because I think there's a lot more conversations we need to have. We got to figure out this advisory committee. I think there's a lot of work to do on what is the scope of the agencies on how you provide the health care to all these different groups. And then finally, I mean, we have one of our state agencies that says they don't know how they're going to do it. So I think there's conversations we need to have inside this room along with our state agencies before this bill is ready. So, but I appreciate it coming forward today, but I just have a lot of concerns.
Thank you. Any other comments? Oh, Representative Katiso Tun.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Sensenmura. I think this is a really important conversation to have, and simply because we may be in a time of not as much plenty as we have been in the past. We do have surpluses as far as the eye can see, and I think it's a really responsible and important discussion to have in terms of how we can better support people who grow our food and how we can do better in terms of controlling our food waste and just exploring the systems and what they look like. So even though this may or may not get funding this year, I mean, many of the things that we were able to fund last year have been discussed for 1 year, 2 years, 10 years. And as those proposals continue on, and reach the point that they are ready to happen, per Representative Igo's comments, I think they get better and better.
So bringing this forward and helping educate us as a committee and also as a legislature, I think really paves the path for good things to come.
All right. Representative Weiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll keep it brief. Rep. Igo hit a lot of my concerns. I'm actually very much in favor of microeconomies. I believe when things stay local as much as possible, it's best for the communities, best for the people. But I also thank the chair for reminding last year how we spent money on Initiative Foundation. And it reminds me that we spent some money last year on both BIPOC farmers, emerging farmers, and there was a number of other ones that kind of overlap with what you're doing here. What was hit on just briefly is the different committees that this would have to go to. You know, agriculture, environment, health, state and local gov, education, and my concern also was how would this affect free lunch program in the state, food security, but also food handling, because in a lot of these smaller, and we have them in our community already, smaller producers don't have necessarily the manufacturing, the safety concerns that go with it as well. So there's restrictions there how they could go straight from farm to table. I mean, it sounds good, but there's a lot of hang-ups, so to speak. So those were my concerns, but especially, you know, the stops that I would have to make because of the scope of this project. And I think there's got to be a lot more discussion on how we would alleviate some of those concerns.
All right. Any other comments? No? Closing remarks.
Thank you, Chair Hassan, and thank you, committee members, for starting this important discussion today. You know, I think lots of important points were raised just about kind of the technical difficulty of doing this bill and then how much kind of oversight would be needed. You know, what I will say is that right now, we don't have anyone playing this role. And the people that are hurting from it are our farmers, the people who don't have access to food, the people that work in our restaurant or food industry and are not being paid living wages. And so that's why, you know, we really think that we need this investment in building up this different kind of economy. When I think about, you know, threats to our state in the future, I feel so lucky that I live in a state where we do have access to clean food and clean water. And I really believe that we need to make sure that we are able to harness that and harness that resource within our state. So thank you for listening to the bill. Look forward to continued discussion. Look forward for a discussion, a bipartisan discussion with members across the aisle and also our agencies about this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. I will renew my motion that House File 2881 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. With no further business in front of us, we are adjourned.